okay.
How many can you save?
11 species. Blue is the last of her kind.
You'll never capture her.
We thought you might know someone who could help.
A rescue op? What could go wrong?
Hey, Blue. You know me.
Come with me. You know you can't stay here. Pack your men up right now.
It was all a lie!
The man who proved raptors can follow orders. You never thought how many millions a trained predator might be worth?
They're gonna sell them.
Not Blue. They need it for something else.
What is that thing?
They made it.
This is the most dangerous creature that ever walked the earth.
I say we shut this whole thing down.
Hey, girl.
You think what I'm thinking?
Genetic power has now been unleashed.
You can't put it back in the box.
Blue!
If I don't make it back, remember you're the one who made me come here.
I'll be all right.
These creatures were here before us. And if we're not careful, they're gonna be here after. Welcome to Jurassic World.
Mad Name Myths family, Culture and Conversations family, we need a moment of silence for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. So we are here once again, Mad Name Myths, Tyler Shorter, my buddy, and Culture and Conversations. That's me, Jameson Smallwood. And we are reviewing the pile movie known as Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
And that is not an understatement. This, unfortunately, is Matinee Conversations covering Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
So
they're not going to like us after this.
No. So Tyler, go ahead and fall on the sword. Whose idea was it to go watch Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom for Matinee Conversations?
It was my idea. I'm all in it up to the neck, man. I was like, okay, it's going to be a big movie. A lot of people are going to see it.
This is true.
We got to review it.
Yeah.
And it's true. It has made, as of right now, has made $2.5 billion worldwide.
Yeah, it is one of those summer blockbusters. I didn't realize it, but we've got really good time with starting these reviews because we are heading into the blockbuster season for 2018. Totally. And yeah, you're right. It's a really big movie. And you know what? To be honest, and I'm not going to totally let you fall on the sword by yourself, buddy. I really didn't have that much of a problem with the movie before, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was actually for it to be a kind of a reboot of the whole Jurassic Park storyline. It was actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah, I didn't see Jurassic World, which I guess is the direct prequel to this.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll just jump back into the Jurassic Park, whatever, you know, franchise, I guess you want to call it.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't like dinosaurs? You know, yeah, I like to see some dinosaurs in action.
So I think that's where we kind of need to set the tone a little bit. So before we really get into this, here's our spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Yeah.
Perfect. So you should have heard something that would have told you that the next statements that we're about to make will spoil this really bad movie. Since you didn't see the first movie, Jurassic World, basically they had another island theme park that was a little bit more successful, I guess. And I'm probably butchering the storyline. I hate the movie so much. I hate this movie so much, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I'm not even going to go back and try to get the details right. But our main protagonist, who's played by Chris Pratt, he's training raptors because for whatever reason, Jurassic World just lost their mind. Jurassic Park franchise lost their mind getting obsessed with the raptors. I don't know what it is about the raptors. I don't know why they have to, you know, make the raptors into these super intelligent dinosaurs that can do everything, including walk on water, but they love the raptors. And they pick up the story in Jurassic World where this guy's basically training these raptors to do interesting stuff that is somewhat paramilitary, but not quite. So of course, just like all the Jurassic Park movies, you know, everything goes crazy. Everything goes to hell in a handbasket, and he survives and is basically back living a normal life away from dinosaurs. And that's where the second movie picks up at, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Well, before we start tearing into it, I also got to quote my main man, Samuel L. Jackson, from the original Jurassic Park. Hang on to your butts. Because this is a bad one.
This is a bad one.
And I'm a huge fan. I mean, obviously, you know, we're of the age when we were kids watching Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
We have that nostalgia of a great movie, a huge blockbuster. I mean, Steven Spielberg.
Exactly.
And it's kind of like if you had a favorite cereal as a kid, you loved it. You haven't eaten it in 25 years. You open the box and it just is horrible. And that's Jurassic World for me.
That's it.
It's kind of like Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I have to specify. I haven't seen Jurassic World.
Yeah, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. You have to, to borrow from your cereal analogy, it's like what they're doing to Frosted Flakes, because we live in a world where kids can't eat sugar anymore, apparently. That's and right. Frosted Flakes used to be like covered in cocaine, and now they're not. They're just lightly sprinkled with something that they call sugar. So this is kind of what I felt like we were watching on screen play out in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
It was Frosted Flakes covered with like cornstarch.
That's it.
Personally, I was thinking it'd be Frosted Flakes covered with rat poison or something, because it was just bad.
Yeah. So let's start walking them through the movie a little bit, Tyler.
Okay.
So the first thing I noticed was that they were trying to, you know, generate a reason for going back to the island. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the plot point where it was basically tree huggers saying that they wanted to go and save the dinosaurs that didn't exist until this big mega company engineered them to begin with?
Yeah, the whole concept of it is just mind-numbing for me. I could see that actually playing out in real world.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you had Jurassic Park, and I'm assuming from what I know of this movie that Jurassic World didn't go any better than Jurassic Park.
No.
So,
no.
It's a failed experiment, essentially.
Exactly.
And as Jeff Goldblum was saying in his, you know, 2 minutes that was in the movie, this is a perfect time to redo it, to correct the mistake in the movie for me.
Exactly. And I think that made perfect sense to me, because they knew from experience and past experience that this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Generating dinosaurs that don't fit into the ecological and biological system of the planet anymore is a bad idea. And yet they keep on you know, insisting that they need to do it. And you get this sort of, I hate to say liberal because I don't even want to make it political, but you basically get this, like I said, this very
left wing, you know, left leaning.
Yeah. So leftist, you know, social justice group that wants to save the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. And they get suckered into going to save the dinosaurs by one of the, basically he's the CEO of the company that produced these dinosaurs, you know, because one of the things that emerged in the movie is that there was a partnership between Hammond, who was the original sort of founder of Jurassic Park, and this guy that that is in the movie, who is basically, you know, he's an ill man, he's dying. So not that his name's even that, because what was his name? I can find it real quick here. And sure enough, I'm being failed.
Wasn't that actually his brother?
Ah, Lockwood. His name's Lockwood.
So he's just partners. He wasn't. I thought he was related.
No. I don't
think that shows you how much I was following.
Yeah. No.
He had his cane though, so they must have been buddies.
Yeah, they were buddies. They had they had similar canes. The amber encrusted, mosquito that they originally extracted DNA from, and allegedly. But the guy's character's name is Benjamin Lockwood. And so this guy, he basically calls out this group and says, hey, come to my house because I want to tell you about my grand plan to save the dinosaurs. And here's my, you know, business CEO, estate manager or whatever, who's going to make that happen. And this guy shows up and he seems all nice and friendly, which immediately lets you know that he's evil. And he decides to send these people who are so ill-equipped to go and try to rescue these dinosaurs. And it's amazing how ill-equipped they actually are to rescue dinosaurs.
Now, I'm going to jump in here and just say that there's one thread that you can just pull on that, and pretty much just what you said, that would unravel the entire movie. You have, it's a genetics company is what the guy runs. Do they not have the genetic code of these dinosaurs why do we need to save them?
Exactly.
When you can recreate them?
Exactly. That's a great point. Why do we need to go save these dinosaurs from extinction when you created them to begin with?
Yes. Now, I will go on record of right now saying that the plot of this entire movie is looser than a pair of sweatpants right before Thanksgiving dinner. There is so much room and so much confusion.
Yeah, there.
It's just a mess. It is just a mess.
Yeah, it's not like those sweatpants. They seem like a great idea. They're comfortable. They fit well, but they're not something you want to really be seen around company in. And if somebody had walked by Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and seen me in a movie theater, I would have tried to hide my face after about the first 15 minutes. So,
well, they could probably see you in those sweatpants too, because there's too many holes. They're going to see a lot of you.
Yeah. There's things that just sucked about the movie. So we've kind of been just giving you a little bit of the plot as we go along.
Just the beginning plot of it so far.
Yeah, just so we can kind of at least give you some background into what happened. So the first thing I hate about the movie, just getting into it, is that the movie had nothing in it that was funny. There was no humor in the movie.
Exactly. I had a point in there. They tried. You felt like they were swinging to the fences on every joke. And every joke, I was just sitting there and I was like, cue the crickets, because it's just not funny.
Yeah. The first joke that kind of landed poorly was when he looked, when Chris Pratt's character, the raptor trainer, that's what we're going to call him, the raptor trainer. When Owen walks over to whoever that girl is that's got him doing this, because you know there's got to be a girl involved if you're going to risk your life for dinosaurs.
Ron Howard's daughter.
He walks over to Ron Howard's daughter and says, you know, if I don't come back, I just want you to know it was your fault for me being here. Crickets.
There were so many jokes before that, too, like... when they were taking off on the plane, and it was like, oh, I guess he's not showing up. And he was sleeping in the plane. Oh, didn't know you, or it's about time you got here.
Oh yeah, that was a, yeah, another one.
I gotta take a side tangent here, man. I gotta address this because he is the key factor that these jokes didn't work. The tech guy.
Oh yeah,
Justice. I can't think of his last name.
Justice Smith.
Yeah, I can't say I've seen a more punchable face.
Yeah.
He kept trying to be funny. He kept like throwing it against the wall, nothing sticking.
Nothing.
And I was rooting for the dinosaurs against that guy. I was like, hoping, come on.
Please, Mr. T-Rex, eat him alive.
Please. You know. Or at least just disable him where he can't speak.
Exactly. It was
really... so cocky for no reason. Oh man, I thought for sure I had money. Like he's the first to go. He's gonna step foot on the island, be done.
Yeah, and it was just the humor was bad. You had bad acting performances because I would say that his acting performance was horrible.
Oh, I believe all around. I think it seemed like everyone just phoned it in.
Yeah,
with the exception of maybe Ron Howard's daughter. She seemed like she was into it.
Yeah. You had, and I'm not going to blame the actors and actresses completely because they had clearly bad material to work with.
You can't polish a turd, man. The script, the whole plot is just horrible. They were definitely there for the paycheck, is all I'll say.
Because, you know, Chris Pratt, he basically didn't try to act like, he basically didn't try to act like another character. He showed up as Star-Lord fighting dinosaurs. That's exactly what his personality was like in this movie.
I would agree with you, but I think Star-Lord's a much better character than this guy with his mustache.
with the mustache that apparently he couldn't grow.
Yeah, the mustache dropped at 10 points for me all by itself.
Yeah, it looked like one of those Rogaine mustaches that I thought about growing.
Oh man.
If you want some homework, go and look up on YouTube Rogaine mustaches.
I know exactly what you're talking about too. Or the Just for Men mustache.
That's it.
Yes.
So we talked about how we hated it. So I guess we need to give a score at some point here, Tyler. What was the score that you gave it before we finish finish tearing it to pieces?
Oh, so we're going to go ahead and give it a score here. I think I told you yesterday that I was at a 30, and I thought for sure that the sting would have subsided, and I was like, well, by the time I record, it would probably be up to 40 or 50.
Mm-hmm.
It's still at a 30, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I came down. I failed it. I gave it a 65, but then when I saw how passionate you were about how bad it was, and I agree with you. Then I came back down, man. Like I'm really hovering around like a, you know, like maybe a 50, you know, because the reason I say that is because it is somewhat of an enjoyable movie if you mm-hmm. like dinosaurs on screen. You get to see that.
That is the only redeeming quality. That's the only reason it got the 30 points. I was like, this movie could have been 10, 15 minutes. Just so the dinosaur action and everything else. This is a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
And the only redeeming quality is the action. The dialogue is horrible. I don't want to get into too much of the plot since we haven't got there yet, but the science parts of it just are cringeworthy. And I'll dive into that later when we get to it. Mm-hmm. But it was literally torture. I'm ruining the plot. We got a flow going, and I'm just ruining it. But the whole premise of it is preposterous.
Yeah, you gotta let the pain out, Tyler. You gotta let it out.
I'll let it out. It's a slow release. I don't want to burn it all at once. I'm a candle, not a bottle rocket here.
Cool. It hurt. It hurt so bad.
It hurt. It was literally torture for me. Every 5 minutes, I was groaning.
Oh man. So I think I started crying. I think I started going to sleep probably about like 40 minutes into the movie.
Man, can I just say one thing here? Mm-hmm. The first, I say half hour of the movie, this is before they even landed on the island. They could just throw that out completely.
Yeah.
It does nothing. You could put a 5-minute dialogue where they're on the plane about the land. You could have just have Jeff Goldblum on there a little bit more. There was a severe lack of Jeff Goldblum when he was promoted. Kind of like when we were talking about Incredibles 2, where they promoted Sam Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
So heavily. They're like, oh, Jeff Goldblum's back. And he was probably shot all his scenes maybe in one day.
Exactly.
He was wearing the same clothes. He was, we're going over, but spoiler, but he's in the beginning, the very beginning.
Yeah.
For maybe 3 minutes tops.
Yeah.
And then he's at the end another two.
And they did such a horrible job with his dialogue because he was just rambling. He was rambling. And it made no sense. And the only thing that, like you said, the only thing that was coherent out of that whole diatribe he went on was let the dinosaurs die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but all this sort of metaphysics and this sort of chaos theory, mumble jumbo that he was trying to, sort of harken back to the original movie where he did such a great job of being the cool chaos theory professor or whatever. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work in this movie because I don't think they really understood how to write a similar dialogue for him in this movie. I just don't think they understood how to do it. So they just had him ramble on and make frowns and talk with his hands. And then it just turned into a bunch of nonsense that could have just,
it seemed to me, at least I got this feeling like he was against doing the movie until the very last minute. And they hit the writer's room, pumped out that dialogue, if you want to call it, for maybe wrote it in an hour or two, and like, all right, this is great. Let's get him in there.
Yeah, they probably gave him
rushed writing.
Yeah, definitely. They probably gave him an extra zero on his paycheck, and he was like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah,
because it really was.
It's probably uninspired.
Yeah, it was. It was horrible and uninspired dialogue, if you ask me. It just felt like they were trying to make you think it was Jeff Goldblum to
the franchise.
Yeah, it's like it's bad. Yeah. So, how did you feel about the science? So you mentioned that. Let's talk about that because I think your perspective you're going to bring to that is going to be really interesting. What did you think about the science?
Pardon the pun, but I have a huge bone to pick.
Okay.
Lava. Can we just say lava is hot?
Yes.
It's not a normal hot. The coldest lava is around 1200 degrees Fahrenheit. That's freaking hot.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt was taking a nap right next to it, dipped a hand in it, woke up, shook it off. Like it was nothing. That would have been no more hand for Mr. Pratt. He's going to be a permanently a lefty.
So you don't find his ability to avoid becoming incinerated by that hot lava. You don't find that to be accurate to what actually would have happened with lava approaching.
For everything I know about lava, no. And then he's not the only one with a superpower. Did you see the lava raining on this dinosaur? And he's just like shaking it off like it's bathwater.
Exactly. That I caught that scene. I said, this dinosaur should be dead. His head should be on fire right now.
The lava would have went through the dinosaur, not just beat off of him like he's scotch guarded. There's no scotch guard for lava.
There's no scotch guard for lava. No. And the thing is, lava is actually molten rock. It's not water.
It's not going to beat off of anything. It's going to incinerate whatever it touches.
And it's heavy. That's the thing about it too. It's dense. Yeah, even though it's
super dense.
Yeah,
and it's gonna, if you put it on anything organic, I don't care what it is. It could be a rhino with an extra rhino skin covering. It's gonna kill it.
Exactly.
You put it on top of the rhino, no matter how big. You put a dime size molten lava on a rhino, it's going to go through it. It may not go through all the way, but it's going to make a dime size hole to when it ever cools down. And then he's going to have a rock inside of him because that's what happens when molten lava cools. It becomes a rock.
That's it. It becomes a rock. And it was funny too, is that there was no flames that resulted exactly. when they dropped on the dinosaur's head. So there's no flames that sparked and lit up. And also, in order for the lava to be as liquid as it was in this movie, then it must have been really hot. It must have been unbelievably hot for it to be that viscous, you know. And yeah,
the thing about lava, and this is, you know, coming from the tap, the volcano is actively erupting.
It's on tap.
It's hot.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's if it's moving as fast as it was moving on the screen, you're looking at, you know, triple or probably quadruple what I quoted. It's probably around, you know, somewhere in between like 3,500 to 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah,
that is hot.
Yeah, that's joke there, man. You get
close to it, you catch on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you can not be that close to it and not get singed or burned or die.
Like National Geographic pictures of people a good 100 yards from a lava flow, kind of similar to what we have, and they have metal tripods that are on fire, not just stuff around the tripods. The actual metal is on fire.
Yeah.
That's how hot lava is from a football field away.
Yeah, yeah.
And you pour it on top of a dinosaur, or you dip Chris Pratt's hand in it, you're not going to stand a chance.
No. It was one of the dumbest scenes in the movie. It's just how they manipulate the lava.
And I know we're watching a movie about dinosaurs come to life, but still, lava's a thing. If you want me to believe this is lava and just not glowing red water, then you have to have the properties of lava.
Yeah, and you can get it right too. You can get it right. So that brings me to another point that I had issue with the movie about the lava, this whole lava volcano thing that was even featured in the promotion of the movie. Mm-hmm. It was completely pointless. There was no reason to even use that as a plot point. Where, oh, the dinosaurs are about to be, you know, made extinct by a volcanic eruption, other than to try to, you know, basically make an homage to some of the science where there was a catastrophic event that we believe wiped out the dinosaurs. So it just made no sense.
Yeah, another thing, I'm pretty sure they said it was 3 years since Jurassic World closed and all that. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty much left alone, from my understanding. For yeah. 3 years, and that's not a very big island, and you have giant herbivores that's going to, you know, destroy the entire vegetation of the on that island. Herbivores are going to start dying. That means the predators are going to start dying because they don't have any herbivores to eat on. They're pretty much going to clean themselves out because they're on that confined space.
Exactly.
I mean, these are big creatures. You have to think an elephant, which is dwarfed by most of these dinosaurs, they eat a lot of food.
Yeah. So you don't think that the one palm tree top that the I think it was a Brachiosaurus ate would be that filling for it?
Yeah, that's like the parsley beside our steaks that we have.
Exactly.
That's not even going to put a dent in it.
Wow.
I mean, it would have been desert within a year. I there would be no grass or anything left.
No, it's not enough. Just there.
In my estimation.
No, I agree with that. The trophic pyramid was all out of whack in the movie. So, also this. So we talked about the island and how the problems there. We talked about the lava. So now we kind of fast forward to. I forgot about this. So how long did it take you to figure out that the girl was a clone? The little girl.
I had the idea as soon as the first time that he moved the file away. He's like, oh, no.
She's a clone. Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. He owns a cloning company, and he lost his daughter, and this is great. I was like, okay, I got that plot line already figured out.
Yeah. Now, what point did that serve in the movie?
None at all.
None. It didn't even bring up any ethical issues around the cloning of a human being that I thought might have been somewhat analogous in some way to what they were dealing with the dinosaurs. They were more worried about dinosaurs being cloned and being alive than than even trying to integrate this girl who they had be a clone for some reason into the movie. There was no reason for her to be in the movie as a clone. Yeah.
There was no reason for her to be in the movie almost at all.
Exactly.
Like her whole character did not really serve a purpose other than, you know, the whistleblower.
Exactly. But,
I mean, you could have had I don't know if she was a teacher or caretaker. She could have been, you know, overheard a conversation from bad guy number one to bad guy number two and brought it to the old guy, Babe the Pig's dad.
Yeah, yeah. Babe the Pig's dad.
It's like the it seemed like it was like, okay, we made this movie. There's, you know, it seems like the plot has been shot with a 12 gauge. Let's just put a whole big hole right in the middle too that has no purpose whatsoever. Yeah, this little girl's a clone.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I wanted them, if they're going to do that, it would have made sense to actually use her cloned nature to make a point in the movie. But it was literally, there was literally nothing in the movie other than the, you know, oh, she's a clone. And it wasn't even delivered that great. It wasn't like it was a surprise because you could tell.
It really wasn't.
Yeah, you could tell she wasn't a clone. You know, I mean, you could tell that she wasn't normal based on how they were treating her and stuff, you know.
Right.
And one of the things, too, you know, that she kind of helped with in the end, she let the dinosaurs free. And she had this like little this stupid statement she made of, oh, they're alive like me. Like, what? That makes no sense. Like, what are you saying? They're clones like you? Are you saying they're alive like you? That doesn't answer the any of this. And then when Ron Howard's daughter, when she could have let the dinosaurs loose, then she was like, you know, basically, no, I'm not going to let them loose. I'm not going to let them loose from being poisoned or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, you just had all of these people risk their lives and went through all of this amazing turmoil and pain and this crazy journey to save the dinosaurs. And then now in your moment where you can free them, you're going to be like, no, I'm not going to free them because they need to die. You know, maybe she just had her, I don't know. Maybe she got more information because
maybe she had a change of heart.
Yeah.
The whole premise of what they're being freed from is just laughable to me. They're weaponizing dinosaurs, and they're being sold for like $45 million a pop and all this.
Yeah,
an A-10 Thunderbolt, you know, the tank buster jets, they cost $18.8 million, and they can kill any dinosaur you put it against.
Exactly.
I guarantee it.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's a budget right there. Instead of buying a dinosaur, and a dinosaur versus, we'll say an unarmed man. Yeah, there's no chance. Versus one to ten armed men, it's going to be a fair match. But you put a dinosaur. They're talking about having a dinosaur against an army.
Yeah,
yeah. Armies have rocket launchers. Armies have tanks. I guarantee the dinosaur couldn't do much against the tank. Even with your little sonic laser gun, you have to have a guy point a gun at a place anyway. Why not just give him an actual gun instead of a dinosaur worth a few, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, $50 million? Give him a rocket launcher. Give him a gun.
Give him a nuclear bomb, maybe.
Yeah.
They could actually do something. You know.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this would have been a good plot point if there wasn't, let's say pre-World War I.
Yeah. So one of the things Tyler's talking about there that's such a good point is that towards the end of the movie, we see the grand villain dinosaur emerge, which was the I can't think of the name of the raptor, but it was like a certain type of raptor.
Yeah, they genetically modified raptor.
Yeah. So in the first movie, and we're talking about Jurassic World that came out, the prequel to this, they had a genetically modified T-Rex and it had all these crazy abilities. It could camouflage itself. It could just do all this other stuff, right? And then they basically take the exact same premise and they genetically modify, I don't know, a raptor. Same idea, right? Same idea for the villain dinosaur. And the, you know, so the, this dinosaur, it was a weapon and they were showing it off as like, look, if we put a laser on a target, then the dinosaur, then we, if we put a laser on the target and then we make this noise from the weapon, the dinosaur will actually go and attack that particular target. And
you know what else works like that? Modern artillery. You paint a target with a laser and then mortar shells rain on it.
Exactly. Exactly. So and it can destroy way more stuff than that little dinosaur could.
Oh, you know? No doubt.
It was just such a bad movie. Then you had the Russian guy who was bidding on the dinosaur and he won the bid for that dinosaur, you know. So now the Russians have these dinosaurs that are, you know, supposedly going to do stuff in the next movies or whatever. But it was everything that made anything that any departure from what could have been a reasonable sort of stretch into science fiction. They completely threw out all anchors and semblances of reality to just make this movie what they wanted it to be.
And can we comment on how convenient everything is? It seemed like a, you know, this isn't a kid's movie. This is for grown up. It was made for grown ups.
Uh-huh.
And they're, you know, Mustache and Miss Rhonda Howard, I'll call her, locked up in a cell. How the hell are they going to get out when they're in the castle or the mansion?
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, who's next door but pretty much a dinosaur, I can't think of the word, a dinosaur battering ram with that really hard skull. It's like, oh, and that's very convenient.
Yeah, exactly. It always is convenient.
And how come nobody saw them running around? They weren't exactly being inconspicuous. There's guards everywhere, but they could hang out just one story up and watch the whole thing go down during the little auction scene. Nobody saw them?
No. You know, for a organization to have mercenaries be a part of their payroll, this mercenary group really was incompetent.
Oh, incredibly, you know, incompetent.
Nobody was impressive there. I don't know why we had them once again, other than trying to sort of, you know, make an homage back to the first movie.
Here's another thing. When they were actually on a ship, and, you know, ships, if you're encased in metal, it resonates sound quite well. And they needed a blood transfusion from the T-Rex to help Blue the raptor. And he wakes up, he or she wakes up and lets out a roar. And as we know from every Jurassic Park movie, T-Rex roars are loud.
Yeah, they're epic.
Inside of a metal ship, you think like one guard would be like, oh, I might need to check that out because that's an incredibly loud roar and we're carrying a shipload of dinosaurs.
And the dinosaur that is roaring, we put him to sleep, so why is he waking back
exactly.
up?
Exactly. And even so, even if he woke up, holy shit, there's a T-Rex awoken walking around in my ship. I might want to do something about that.
Exactly. I think they also did some interesting stuff with the scale of the dinosaurs too. You know, they had these dinosaurs sort of magically fit into the boat. That boat would have had to have been massive in order to house all those dinosaurs, man.
It didn't look that big from the outside. It may be one of those Doctor Who TARDIS things where it's bigger on the inside.
It's bigger on the inside than the outside. We've been brutal on the movie because it's just bad.
Dude, and the whole thing about it is I was expecting it to be good.
Yeah.
You know, if I wanted to see a bad movie, I would have gone and seen Uncle Drew. I know that's going to be a bad movie.
Exactly.
But I had that expectation coming in, and I would probably, I enjoy a movie every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to bet dollars and donuts that Uncle Drew is a fest.
Yeah.
But I would have enjoyed it compared to Jurassic World.
Yeah, because you know what kind of budget they had for it. They, you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't something that they promoted like that. And then two is not following up to a relatively interesting reboot of the franchise too. So, it's like they just phoned it in on this, you know.
It was the plot. The plot was so bad that it just dragged the entire movie down with it.
Yeah,
and I believe I can say the entire movie could be summed up where a few statements here. If you let me ramble here.
Okay, Tyler Shorter of Mad Name Miss brings us
Jurassic Park, Fallen Kingdom. You don't need to see it after I say this.
Okay.
We gotta save the dinosaurs. Oh no, we've been double crossed. They're gonna sell the dinosaurs. I'm a clone. The dinosaurs are free. End of movie. Roll credits.
Roll credits. I mean, even some of the scenes, and this is another thing too, right, about the promotion to those points you brought up. Even the ending of the movie where you had the Jeff Goldblum monologue at the mm-hmm. end where he is talking, now he's back in front of Congress yet again for some reason wearing the exact same clothes.
Can I say another thing? Why are they having a congressional address when they're interviewing him when there's dinosaurs running around? It's not the time for legislator there. It's time to call the National Guard. It's time. The shit has hit the fan.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about it, you know, and sit around for months. But, yeah, we need a little more Jeff Goldblum.
In the same clothes that he had on in the first scene in the movie, you know.
No, his character is eccentric, so maybe he only owns one suit.
He might be doing the Steve Jobs effect.
Yes.
So they use those scenes in the end of the movie to make it appear like the dinosaurs would be roaming around in mixing in with the people a lot sooner than what they actually did in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff you see in the credits trailer make it seem like the dinosaurs, part of the story is going to be the dinosaurs are among us. And you don't really get any of that at all in this movie. It's almost like this movie is the prequel to what the movie that the trailer previewed, if that makes sense.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
And the whole laughable concept is that we're going to coexist. I mean, have you not watched any Jurassic movie ever?
Right. Yeah.
Dinosaurs don't like us.
Yeah. Yeah.
that's why I think it was funny too that you say the villain the evil dinosaur or the villainous dinosaur is mm-hmm. going to Russia. They're all pretty bad news, you know.
Exactly. They make you feel. I think that's one of the things about this movie that's funny is that they make me feel like, they make me feel like I can actually stick my hand out in front of the nose of a velociraptor and click some stuff and whistle and that I'm going to be able to control the dinosaur one day. That's what it makes me. It gives me hope that I can do that.
Well, other than dinosaurs that are never going to exist again, I definitely, if let's say a spaceship lands and velociraptors come out, I'm not going to be the first one with a clicker in my hand. I'm going to leave them alone.
Yeah.
And they can do what they want. And I'm going to buy some guns.
Exactly. I suggest a 12-gauge shotgun with slugs, and I also suggest that you get a high-powered assault rifle.
Yeah, I'm thinking 30-06 minimum. I want range.
Delicious choice there. Delicious choice.
So, and I got a big head, so it's pretty nice target.
That's true. That's true. You want to hit the big head. So yes. I wish I could at least recommend going to see it, but nah. I'm going to go to therapy to see if I can't have them wipe my memory of it.
Where are the men in black when you need them?
That's it, man.
Man, I have to say this was the worst movie I've seen since Jack Reacher.
Ooh.
And Jack Reacher is the movie that killed Tom Cruise for me. I cannot watch another Tom Cruise movie. That was his last chance. He put out some stinkers before, and then I was like, okay, it's Tom Cruise. Everybody loves Tom Cruise. I got to check this out.
Wow.
But wow. Have you seen Jack Reacher?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I think
yeah, I think you've made me swear off that movie. As you know, because Jack it's so
Reacher,
bad.
The movie Jack Reacher probably says Jack Reacher 6,000 times.
Wow!
If you want to have a drinking game where you're guaranteed to be plastered, sit around and watch Jack Reacher and take a shot every time he says Jack Reacher. Somebody says Jack Reacher. Yeah. Anyway, we're supposed to be destroying Jurassic World, not Jack Reacher.
Wow.
But Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I believe somebody said, you know, coined it very well on your Facebook that the title itself has described the movie.
I would say so. It is a very bad movie, and it's up there in terms of really bad movies I've seen in the last probably couple of years.
Yeah.
We have to. We're going to try to do better, hopefully soon, with our movie selection for Mad Nate Conversations, because we killed. I mean, in fairness to us with the Incredibles 2, we went into it thinking it was going to be a good movie because we didn't know it was going to have those issues. Well, but
the same is true for Jurassic World. I was expecting a good movie.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I wasn't expecting a great movie by any means, but I was expecting a solid performance at least.
Yeah, I think if I want to add one more point to those points that you brought up to summarize the movie, you could put it at any point after the dinosaurs. We see dinosaurs, people running around with dinosaurs. It felt a little bit like Transformers, where Megan, what's her name, Megan Fox, was just doing a whole bunch of running around the Transformers, and you don't know why they're doing all that running. You know, at some point you're like, okay, like, is all that running really necessary? And with the dinosaurs in Jurassic World, there's just it's just a big chase movie that you never feel like at any point anybody's going to die, you know?
Yeah. Even the tech guy that really needed to die.
Yeah. Justice Smith, more like Injustice Smith.
His barb and his silver tongue. Culture and Conversations, people, please don't go see this movie if you haven't already.
And Matinee Myths subscribers, don't go see that movie. Now, if you're listening to this unsubscribed, shame on you, so go see it.
If you saw it and liked it, okay. I won't call you stupid, but I'll think it. No, if you like the movie, more power to you. I like to blame my mood for being so bad, but like I said, I gave it a good 24 hours to think about the movie, and I wasn't even in that bad of a mood before starting the movie. Somehow got worse by the end of the movie, though.
So I think that just about wraps up our review of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Tyler, did you have anything else you wanted to add, man?
No, I think we did enough to – it's got to stay down.
I'm going to say this. The dinosaurs needed to stay extinct, and they needed to die. And I would say that this movie franchise needs to die as well.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Should not be resurrected, so – So, Tyler, plug your podcast, man.
All right. Matinee Myths, as you guys have heard, matineemyths.podbean.com. You can always email me to get in touch with me at matineemyths@gmail.com or on Facebook or Twitter at matineemyths.
Perfect. And this is Culture and Conversations host Jameson Smallwood. Thank you guys for being part of the conversation. You can reach out to me, cultureandconversations@gmail.com, or if you want to do it on Facebook, Culture and Conversations, and Instagram is the same thing, Culture and Conversations. And feel free, if you guys want to reach out to either of us, I'm sure that Tyler will forward me any feedback that you guys have that you send him, and I'll do the same for him. So Yeah, we look forward to hearing from you guys.
And not every review is brutal. This was just an exception.
Yeah, yeah. We, in fairness, we're trying to see movies without going into it with our personal wish list, you know, in hand for what we picked to watch. So we're taking things as they kind of come out, which is really cool. And but at the same time, that means we're going to get exposed to a few bad movies along the way. But we do have one that we are looking forward to seeing coming up soon. Is it too soon to tell the people, Tyler? Or
go
do we want to
go for it, Mr. Smallwood?
So the next movie we're going to review on Culture and Conversations, featuring Maddening Conversations and Maddening Myths, featuring Maddening Conversations, is going to be Ant-Man.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Ant-Man and the Wasp. I can hear the hate mail from the I shouldn't say liberals, but the feminists right now. Oh, he didn't mention the woman.
Oh man, from the early reviews that I'm getting out of it, it sounds like she is the star of the movie,
which would be awesome because I think I mean we've been rocking with the female empowerment streak in these superhero movies, and
the fact that she has wings is cool enough for me,
and a skin tight suit, Tyler, that shrinks her down and enlarges her. You know,
you know, if you're going to be that small, you need to fly, not rely on a flying ant.
This is true. This is true. Why didn't you just give him wings if you want him to fly? So
yes,
cool. Doing well.
Great comic book movie. I'm sure it's going to, be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. We may, we're definitely going to give it, reviews that are probably going to be better than this one, unless they just disappoint us with how they execute the movie. So
you never know.
Yeah, it is possible. So,
but we are usually very accepting of movies.
Yeah, we are. We're pretty laid back. So, but yeah, enjoyed doing this with you, man. Always a pleasure, dude.
Always. Take my sounds out and put actual taps in there.
You know what? That's perfect, man. Put taps in there, man.
I'm going to, man. It's just, it's there.